You're listening to Watch Us Go, Talk of Muskegon. And today, I have with me Frank Peterson, our city manager for the city of Muskegon. Hi, Frank.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been here.
A few months.
I know, you've been a little busy, haven't you?
Yeah, I think so. It's been a busy summer.
Just like a few projects going on around the city?
Yes.
Yeah, just now there was a big one that was just announced recently.
Yes,
out at kind of heard that?
Yeah, out at the former Sappy Paper Mill.
Yeah, that one. It's called a Windward Point, right?
Yep. Yeah, Windward Point. It'll be hopefully a large mixed-use development that really brings a lot of new opportunities to the west side of Muskegon and really all of Muskegon and all of West Michigan.
People are so excited about that. So now eventually that whole area is going to be cleaned up.
Yep. And they seem to have made a commitment to have it essentially all cleaned up within a year of the day they closed. So about 11 and a half months from now, have the property essentially cleaned up and looking like it's in good shape for redevelopment.
Right. Now, do you know anything about the gentleman who purchased this, a little bit of them?
Yeah.
How many are there? There's 11?
I think there are 11. If I had to count them in my head.
Yep.
And, you know, there a lot of them are industrialists and business owners and community leaders in the not just the city of Muskegon. Actually, most of them are probably outside of the city of Muskegon.
Right.
But it's people in the Muskegon area that believe in Muskegon and want to do something great to kind of leave their mark and push Muskegon forward.
And these people are already investing their money in Muskegon. I think almost all of them are business owners who really have a lot of money vested. And now they saw this issue over here with Sappy and not doing anything, and they just decided to do something on their own.
Yep, exactly. And really, you see their names all over the place anyway.
Yes.
You see them at the businesses that they own, but you see them downtown on things like the Old Toff Stage or the Heinz Building or the donors at the Farmers Market or the donors even at the new stage at Hackley Park. You see their names all over the place. They're known philanthropists in the community, but they're also known successful industrialists.
These are people that get things done. So
yes.
This is a little different than maybe some of the other projects maybe that we've worked on in the past where, you know, these are people that are really used to type A personalities, is that fair?
Yeah. I won't go that far, but I will say a lot of times we deal with people that aren't from the area. They come in, they have kind of a fly-by-night idea, and they want to get rich quick off of the community, and they're not always well-capitalized. And, and these folks seem to be the exact opposite of that. They're willing to put their own resources into it. They're not doing it, you know, purely for financial gain. They've got a little bit of altruistic motive as well. And we think that those two things combined with the size of the group being 11 people committed to Muskegon, they really all point to the idea that it's got a greater chance of being successful.
These are people that their families live here, their grandchildren live here, they've lived here, many of them, all their lives. So they have a love for Muskegon, so it's really exciting. Now, some of the things that we heard was maybe some housing in there.
Yep.
And marina.
I don't want to say they're being close to the vest, focused all their attention on really getting the deal closed.
That was difficult.
Yeah. So that was really difficult for them to kind of get through all the humps that they needed to get through there.
And they've
kind of told us that they really want to let the market dictate what happens down there.
But they're going to happen.
Knowing that they don't really want to do a lot of heavy industrial or things like that because they know the neighbor doesn't want it, but wanting to otherwise keep an open mind as to if there is housing, what type it'll be, whether it's single family or multifamily. If there's going to be things like some light industrial that's low impact on the environment or then other things like retail and hotels and restaurants, you know, I think they're keeping an open mind on what all those could be so that they don't want to set themselves on a path that's not going to be successful.
So there's not an actual set plan at this moment for what they're going to be doing there. They're just going to they're just trying to get at the environmental phase.
Is that right? They're going through the cleanup phase.
Yep.
And I think as part of the cleanup phase, they will be starting to engage developers and people that have ideas and have capital to do certain things there.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they intend to be developers themselves, more like the conduit that gets the property ready for developers. And like I said, they've got an idea of the types of things that they want to see there and types of things that they don't want to see there, but they're not quite ready to pigeonhole one thing over the other in any particular area.
Right. And they say it's a $200 million project when all is said and done, they're thinking?
Yeah, I think they said that forecasts say that it could easily be a $200 million project.
Right.
They're not guaranteeing that that's what the cost will be, but it could be more, it could be less. It really depends on how dense the development ends up being.
But what a huge investment in the city of Muskegon.
Yeah, a huge investment. In the city of Muskegon.
And that property could have been sitting there for many years. So
it has been sitting for many years.
Many more years.
And I think it's just a testament to the rebirth of Muskegon.
I think so.
And really, if you look all around the state and probably really in the Midwest, you'd be hard to find the amount of waterfront property than what you see around Muskegon Lake and Muskegon, because there's 100 plus acres here, but there's also 100 plus acres down at the Consumers Energy site, and we're seeing former Michigan Steel start to make some movement towards potential redevelopment, and the Kirksey properties for sale down at the end of West Western, and you're starting to add it up. You start to really see, you know, 200 acres easy of prime waterfront property getting ready to convert from industrial to some kind of new 21st century use that's probably going to be mixed use tourism housing, and that will really change the landscape of Muskegon, and it'll probably change the population and the demographics to a certain extent as well.
Now, do you know anything about, since you brought it up, BC Coplant, what they're going to be doing over there?
No, we still don't know yet. You know, from our understanding is they're looking at two options. One is essentially demoing the property and making it for sale, and another one is selling the property for somebody else to demo and reuse.
And reuse that.
And so we haven't heard which route they're going to take. They're kind of they're going down both routes at the same time, and then at the end, I think they're going to pick one.
Okay.
And hopefully, we'll know in the next month or so when that will be. Now they have either way committed, you know, to having essentially the property cleaned up or the demolition completed within a couple of years.
All right.
But it's still going to be kind of like Sappy. It's going to take some time to clean up such a big property.
Right. Now, we have another project going on in the city, too, which is nothing to sneeze at, and that's Watermark.
Yeah, sure. So the Watermark folks announced about a $33 million investment in their property there, which will be 128 or 126 new apartments, all on Western Avenue across from the YMCA and Hartshorn Marina. Okay. I'm sorry, MCC and the Hartshorn Marina. And then there's an entertainment venue on the backside of that property that'll have things like a bowling alley and arcade and restaurants and bars. And I think there's paintball and indoor mountain biking and all kinds of different things that aren't available in Muskegon right now.
So we should have like an employee team thing, building with paintball.
It could either be team building or we can take out frustrations.
Yeah, we can. I know. I'm kind of afraid how that'll turn out.
Yeah, we might put planning and DPW on separate sides and see how that works.
Oh, no. Don't tell people our secrets here. So it's pretty exciting because a lot of things have been happening downtown this summer. And one of them that I've been visiting are the first Fridays of the month.
Yes.
Now, who is it that's running those?
Sure. It's Downtown Muskegon now is technically running the first Fridays, although we've had different groups come in and sponsor and or take on different events. So, for example, the one that we had earlier this month, which was the street performers.
Yes, I was there.
It was obviously sponsored by Downtown Muskegon now, but it was mostly organized by Rachel Doty, who's a local resident who had a passion to get that project done. And if you spent any time downtown, you saw that there were all kinds of people down there enjoying.
Oh, it was great. It was a fun time. And then we also had the concert going on at Parties in the Park.
Yeah, and actually that day was just an amazing day downtown. If you think about it, you know, there's Parties in the Park and there was First Fridays, and they were both packed. And then we had a couple thousand people at Elsie Walker for the
Rodney Atkins.
Yeah, for Rodney Atkins.
Yes.
And all of those people were down here while Coast Guard was going on in Grand Haven and while it was open night for the Olympics.
Right. So we were packed. Yeah. We were absolutely packed.
Right. If you factor all those things in, downtown Muskegon did a good job of attracting people downtown
really
and
did.
Keeping them downtown.
Yeah. And now this is going to be an event that's going to happen all throughout the year.
Yes. It'll be year-round, first Friday of every single month. I want to say for September, they're doing this Touch the Truck. So they're going to have all kinds of heavy equipment downtown for a lot of young little boys down here to see the big trucks that they always point out when they're driving from one place.
I have a 2-year-old little cousin that I've already sent an invitation to his parents, knowing that he would love this. Yep. Are you kidding? All those great big trucks that you can kind of touch, and I bet you can probably get into a couple of them, I'm thinking anyway.
Yeah, and I think that event's actually sponsored by Ramos Towing,
awesome.
if I remember right. And I think the month after that, they're going to have fires up and down up throughout Western Avenue, and then
fires.
Acoustic music, yeah, like burn barrels, and so it's called like fire and acoustics or something like that. So they're gonna have music and fire and stuff like that up and down. And
that's gonna be fun.
Yeah, I think it will, and that'd be kind of bringing in the fall because that'll
be
in October.
Right. There's going to be more barrels, I'm assuming, as it gets colder, if we're going to be outside, too.
Yep. Yeah, and if people are listening and they got an idea for a First Friday event that they want to pitch, I'd strongly encourage them to contact downtown Muskegon now. Mm-hmm. And
Dave
and,
Alexander, yeah, that he's located at the Chamber.
Yep,
you
Dave,
can find him.
Mm-hmm. Dave or Ellen over or there, Ellen, and, yep, and just talk to them about your idea and, you know, if you got the time to put into it and the ability to organize it, yep, I'm sure they'll be glad to have your help down there and getting people downtown on Fridays.
I know, we would love it. Okay, so there's another event happening at the end of the month, Burning Foot.
Yes, yeah. So we have the Burning Foot Beer Fest, second annual, yep, down at Pier Marquette Park.
Yes.
This is the first year we've allowed them to have camping on the beach. And they
first
opened,
attempt.
Yes, yep, they opened up camping on the beach and promptly sold out camping on the beach.
Wow.
So they've sold out all their tent camping, and now they're allowing some select RVs and trailers to come in and use the parking lot. And I want to say those are $50 or $100. People can probably get more information off their website. But yeah, it's the second annual, and it's grown from last year. And it should
last
be
year they had a lot of rain.
Last year they had a lot of rain, right, and it was still packed.
It was absolutely packed. I couldn't believe it.
It was still essentially sold out. I'm a volunteer down there. I've got one job to do, and that's keep two fires going. like last year, I'll be manning the fire pits. And I think they figured if anybody could get a big fire going down on the beach and not get in trouble for it, it's probably
me. Yeah, that would be you. Yeah, and to keep you away from the beverages, is that it too?
Yeah, I think I get 10 drink tickets.
And then also there's another one. There's the Jazz Fest is coming, right?
Yeah, the Jazz Fest is returning. I think third year now for the Jazz Fest.
Yep.
And that's about the same time. It's the last Friday of the month, last weekend of the month.
Last weekend.
But that Friday, in conjunction with the organizers, we're hosting a free concert at Hackley Park. So it'll be kind of like Parties in the Park, but not really Parties in the Park.
Okay.
It'll take the place of Parties in the Park because it'll be done the week before.
Okay.
And then so the Jazz Fest will be down there with a couple of bands. And it'll be free. There'll be things for people to do down there and enjoy the music. And I'll run from, I think, 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock.
Wow. And completely free for everybody.
Completely free.
So people should probably bring their chairs.
Yeah, people should bring chairs. They should probably bring beverages. Like I said, it'll be different from Parties in the Park, so there won't be any alcohol sales there.
No.
We don't know that there are going to be much for food and beverage there. It's just going to be kind of a simple,
right?
Just a simple, come, bring your chair, bring your snack. And
we'll probably have something. I think we're going to offer some Wash Muskegon t-shirts.
Okay, good.
That's the plan, and some beverages in that, but... Frank Peterson, you can shake his hand then too, because he's going to be there with me, helping me out with that.
Okay.
But it should be a lot of fun. And then you talked about the Walker Arena, and I know we had the Roddy Atkins show, and then we have another one coming in November. It's that the Christian band that just played this last the country.
I think they're called Of King and Country.
Thank you. Yes.
Of King and Country. Yes. Yep. And this is a good one for us because it gives us a chance to play Landlord. It's kind of funny. Like we did the Roddy Atkins concert, and for a city, we take on a lot of risk. You know, you pay a band, you do the promotion, and you kind of the event lives or dies by how well the ticket sells. In this situation, the promoter came to us and just asked to rent the facility, and he'll do essentially all the promotion and bring the band in and sell the tickets and all that stuff. So it gives us a chance to kind of sit back and see how somebody else does it.
Right.
But the cool thing about having the arena is we get the flexibility of that. So some of the more difficult concert, we can stick our necks out online and see how we do.
Uh-huh.
And then the ones where people have an idea and they have a plan and they have a band lined up, we can just kind of be the space for them to do that.
And they can just lease it from us.
Yeah, they can just lease it from us.
Which is really nice. And then we also have a liquor license there, which is not always easy to get. So a lot of people who want a venue, that's a good place to go because they can access that liquor license too.
Yep. Yeah. And there aren't too many places inside, obviously, mm-hmm, in Muskegon County where you can have 6,000 people watching a concert or a show or a comedy show or whatever it may be. We're probably about the only place that can do that inside.
Right.
And so it gives us an opportunity to have some bigger name bands that require a bigger draw to break even.
Yep. Now we have some changes going on at the LC Walk Arena, and I think that you were very instrumental in that happening. Can you tell people what that's about?
Yeah, sure. So we were trying to accomplish two important things down there. one was improve the fan experience for people that are in the arena, whether they be there for hockey or football or soccer or a concert. But also we wanted to activate the arena during non-game days. And so what we've worked out a deal with is we're converting a corner of the arena on 4th and Western into a restaurant and distillery. And so that'll be pretty neat. It'll be about a 5,800 square foot carve out of the if you want to call it the concourse.
Uh-huh.
And instead of having seats there, you know, normal seats, you'll be inside a restaurant. You can look out the windows and watch the game and stuff like that. But you'll get the goal is to have better food options, which we really don't have at the arena right now. We're very, very limited because we don't have a full kitchen. We have a lot of, you know, a lot of warmed up things and a lot
pretzels,
of
popcorn,
deep fried stuff.
Yeah.
And these folks will have a full kitchen, and they'll have things that range from $12 to $50. So there'll be high-end stuff. They'll have a chef on board. And then they'll be doing distilling there. And I want to say they were going to have 20-plus different flavors of rum available, including things like rum smoothies and stuff like that. And they're also proposing a small distillery in there where they can make some beers for people to drink. And we think it's going to really add to the fan experience.
Right.
It'll give people that otherwise aren't going to the arena a reason to go into the arena and see what's going on there. And hopefully at the end of the day result in more traffic for the Lumberjacks, more traffic for the Ironmen, more traffic for all the events that we do in the LCOA.
And for our downtown area.
Yep. And we activate that section of Western Avenue, which really is a dead block all day long because the arena takes up so much of it, and there's typically nothing going on there during the day.
Right. Right. And then we also have the two breweries down there. And then we have another distillery that's coming in.
Yeah, we have a distillery, 18th Amendment. I'm not sure what their planned opening date is.
I know. It's a secret. He still won't tell me. I just tried again this week, and he just smiles. Yeah. That's all. So I'm dying to, but things are happening in that building because I peeked in there and stuff, and it's looking pretty cool.
Yep, they're moving. They're definitely moving.
Yeah, they are doing stuff. It's not just sitting there. But when do you plan on the distillery then opening at the LC?
So the goal is to have the distillery open. I'm assuming we get all the licensing in order through the LCC. The goal is having to open in early 2017. It won't be ready for the start of the Lumberjack season, but it'll be there during part of the Lumberjack season, kind of to break it in. And so the big deal for that will be breaking it in the winter months, and then we're ready to go for the summer.
Right.
And then next Lumberjack season it'll be there for the full season.
Now, there was another announcement, too, that I saw, and that was that the Risers are going to be playing there this winter.
Yeah, the Risers have joined an indoor soccer league, I do believe, and they're going to have four games, I want to say, or five games there at the LC.
I have a stepdaughter who is beyond excited. She's known as their number one fan.
Yeah, I think I've seen her around with her Risers gear.
Just a little bit, yeah. So she's so excited, and the fans are really excited, and this will be an opportunity. You don't have to wait till next summer to be able to actually see soccer.
No.
Now, will that be on the grass?
Yeah, it'll be on the turf, the same turf that they played two exhibition games this past winter, and they were pretty well attended, and they ran a couple camps in there as well.
Right.
And so I think what we're going to try to do is run them as much as we can back to back with the Ironmen, so that we're not exerting a lot of.
I was just going to ask you, is the football team coming back?
Yeah. All indications point they are. We originally signed a 1-year deal with them last year.
All right.
And we'll plan on opening up the discussions with them on year two and beyond.
Okay.
But all indications are that they will be back. They're looking at a new league. You know, that's a little more competitive. If you notice, they scored 100 points on a couple teams last
year. Yeah, I was there at one of them,
So some of them were fun for us because we're winning by a lot. But but you can only beat somebody by so much before you're not interested in playing against them anymore.
Yeah, kind of happened,
Yeah, so I think they're looking at another league that might give them a little more competition and make the games a little more exciting.
Sure. And then, of course, we have the Lumberjacks that are coming.
Yep, Lumberjacks are coming back, and we're expecting this to be a big year. They drafted or tendered a guy. That's supposed to be one of the very best 16-year-old hockey players in the world.
Really?
He's moving over here from Russia. His older brother was the first-round draft pick of the Red Wings last year.
Oh.
And his name's eluding me right now, but everything that I've heard about him is absolutely amazing, and they're expecting him to come in and really draw people, draw scouts, draw fans.
So this is a big deal.
Yeah. He's supposed to be the real deal. And I'll tell you, John Van Biesbroek does a great job of recruiting as it is over there. And if he really thinks this guy's a real deal, then
that's exciting.
Then I'll stand behind him on that. I don't have to see him beforehand. I know he's better than me. But
What else is going on at the LC? I know that is Reese Puffer then too. Are they?
Yep.
They're going to have their games there. Are they practice there?
We're the home of Reese Puffer's varsity team.
Okay.
We're also the home of the Junior Jacks, and we're home of Norton Shores Rec League. So we have a big hockey presence down there from really all over the region. And that's one thing that I think gets lost in the shuffle is that arena really, it supports the whole region.
Yes.
Probably the whole region more so than the city of Muskegon.
Okay.
Because a lot of times if you look at a lot of these things, like Junior Jacks are by and large, suburban residents.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lumberjacks, obviously, most of those are students in Mona Shores. That's just typically where the billets take the kids to go to school. And then Reese Puffer, Reese Puffer's obviously in Reese Puffer.
Right.
And then the Motor Norton Shores Rec League is obviously in Norton Shores.
Right.
But we're happy to host those folks in there and get them in our downtown. And this idea of adding things like distilleries and restaurants and other ways for these folks to spend their dollars while they're downtown is how we turn around and make this regional asset actually be a local asset to us.
Right.
Because we bring that regional money back into the city.
That's right. That's right. So we have all of this fun and exciting stuff going on down there, and that's what I was wondering about. You had another project that you were working on just outside of the downtown area, and that's the houses that were built.
Yes,
Midtown Square, right?
Yes, okay. Midtown Square, and the idea behind that was, a lot of people say, well, why is the city getting into the real estate business and things like that? And our whole point was, we're not getting into the real estate business. We're doing what we always do, and what one of our main goals is, and that is making sure our neighborhoods are sustainable, making sure that they're livable, and making sure that they're enjoyable. And the reality is, Nelson neighborhood is an amazing neighborhood, but it had been slipping in the last few years, and in particular in that area. And one of the things that we thought that we could do to really improve the quality of life in that neighborhood was take a big vacant area and reactivate it and put some houses in there and attract some new families and kind of put a shot in the arm, so to speak, of the neighborhood.
Yes.
Now, granted, we sold one house.
Yes.
Which is good, and we have 8 more to sell. Mm-hmm. We're working on those.
Yep.
But we fully expect that the houses will sell. If you drive down there, the neighborhood, especially that portion of the neighborhood, looks and feels a whole lot different.
Oh, it's awesome. I was just down there today, and it's absolutely beautiful there.
Yep. I'll have to give some credit to the to Alan Edwin, who made some recommendations on where we should upgrade the houses and where we shouldn't in terms of colors on the houses and quality of the roofs and the number of windows and all those things. And yeah, we could have built the houses a lot cheaper than we did. I think every house has about $10,000 or $12,000 worth of upgrades in them from the base house. But if you look at them compared to a base house, they fit better into what you see in the rest of our neighborhood. So like a lot of our older houses they were finished like a real house all the way around, all 4 sides.
Right.
Whereas a lot of new construction, they put a lot of heavy work in the way how nice the front looks. And then they skimp on windows on the sides and the back, and they don't trim them out right. And they don't do the things that they do on the front.
No.
But we insisted that they carry that all the way around the building. And now when you go through there, you can definitely tell that the houses look like they belong in the neighborhood.
So if people are interested in seeing those houses, how can they do that?
Oh, the best thing is to contact our realtor. So we have 2 realtors, Cindy and Mary. They're both with Coldwell Banker.
Yes.
You can contact Coldwell Banker and ask to see one of the houses, and they'd be very happy to show you. They're listed right now. There's a range. So they start in the mid-160s, and I think the highest one is just under $200,000. But when you look at that from a cost standpoint, the builder was building very similar houses like out in Fruitport Township in Norton Shores, and those houses are averaging over $50,000 more than what these are. And ours do have, in my opinion, a little bit more. They're different, but a little bit more upgrade to them. The yards are a little bit bigger, and they just have a lot more to offer, especially if you're a person who seeks out urban living. You know, the walkability to the downtown is
very short walk.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how quickly you can be downtown to Western Avenue and
to the waterfront.
Yep. Yeah, really into
very
the waterfront.
Very close. Yes. Yes.
Yep. There's a park across the street. For families and if the goal is to especially if you like Muskegon Public, there's great schools around there, but there's also opportunities outside the district if that's what you choose. But we think that we give kind of the best of everything.
And that's right.
And one of the things I like to say is you're not as close to the mall or to Harvey Street, but the reality is you drive there anyway. So whether you're driving 2 minutes or 7 minutes, I don't think it's that much of a difference.
Not much of a difference.
When you're going grocery shopping.
Not like in other areas where it's so built out and it takes you 45 minutes to get across town.
Yep.
That's one thing I appreciate about Muskegon so much.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, we need to invest in our neighborhoods. We need our neighborhoods to be strong if you want Muskegon to survive.
Right.
And the people that live there deserve strong neighborhoods. And that's
absolutely
what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. Now, we have another strong program in the downtown that is immensely popular, that attracts thousands and thousands of people every Saturday, and that's our farmers market.
Yes.
Huge, huge success. How long has it been? Are we on our third year?
Yeah, we're on our third full year of having them there, and we just had MSU out, and they did kind of a market study. They surveyed people there, they counted people, and it's good and it's bad to kind of see the results of that, because they're already saying, hey, there's more people here than you thought they were going to be here. You need more bathrooms. You need more of this. There's too many cars here. People are complaining about parking. And to us, that's a good thing. So some of the things we're saying, if people are complaining about parking, and they even say it in there, it's good that they're complaining about parking.
Right.
That means that there's a lot of people coming in to use it, and they're staying. They're not just showing up, grabbing a couple things, and leaving after 5 minutes. They're sticking around. But they did note that they counted on that day. They were only at 3 of the 4 entrances, but they counted like 8,900 people there on that Saturday. And so they estimated that well over 10,000 people were there on a typical Saturday. And so they noted some things that they recommended that we could improve on, and that is, you know, adding some more bathroom amenities. Where we'll fit those, I don't know, and how we fund them, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But doing that and doing some traffic calming measures along Market Street, because there's a lot of people crossing the road there, but also we leave it open for cars to come through and pick up the things that they
pick up their items, right? If you're carrying like heavy produce or plants, and I know I've drove through there many times because we made many trips like that ourselves.
Yeah, so it's gonna take a minute to find the happy medium there, but I think we're excited to know that the market is outperforming even our initial expectations.
Yeah, anybody who thought it was going to do what it's doing right now, I would say I would have a hard time believing that. Let's just say, yeah, it's been phenomenal. And it's just grown and grown, and everybody, I think everybody who was the naysayer or wasn't exactly excited about moving it, I think they're all convinced now that was a great move.
Yes, and really, the survey opened our eyes up to some things that maybe we could try to start to consider to even grow that some more. So I'll give you like an example. We have a lot of people that come in from Norton Shores and North Muskegon. We only had 1% of our 1% of our shopping population from Roosevelt Park. So we know that that's a potential place that we can do some outreach in to get some more people in. But also, they broke down the city residents by neighborhood. And we were seeing when you go through there that by and large, the visitors are coming from, you know, Lakeside, Glenside, Beechwood, Bluffton, you know, kind of the west side of town.
Mm-hmm.
There were some from Nelson neighborhood too. That was another larger one. But a lot of the east side neighborhoods were underrepresented at the farmers market.
Oh.
So it kind of puts the onus on us to try to figure out, okay, how do we reach out to our east side neighborhoods?
Why is that, and how can we get them down there?
Yeah, how can we get them down there? Because we could easily add 2,000-4,000 more visitors every Saturday if we can engage those neighborhoods and understand what would attract them down to the farmers market.
So everything that we're talking about, all I hear is dollar signs. So how is this exactly going to get paid for?
I don't know. That's, you know, some things you look at, you know, when you say like a market, you want to pay for itself,
right,
or you think it needs to have to pay for itself. But other times you look at it and you say, well, the economic outlook or the impact on quality of life or the impact on the downtown far outweighs, you know, the dollars that you invest in it. So, for example, we have parks all over the city that don't generate any money, but they're there because they add to quality of life.
Yes.
And so, to a lot of extent, we need to look at the farmers market as a park like that. You know, it's our downtown park that attracts 10,000 people in the downtown.
Right.
You know, the L.C. Walker doesn't attract that many people in downtown on a weekly basis.
No, it doesn't.
There's probably not a single business downtown that does.
No.
And so to think that has to be 100% cost contained, I think it would be a little unreasonable. It'd be great if it was.
Yes.
But I think that we can quantify the value that it brings in the downtown and justify putting some city dollars in there to make people comfortable when they come.
Now, one of the things that we are going to try to do, though, we are actually going to be doing, is a fundraiser.
Yes.
On September 10th.
Yep.
And that's going to be for the farmers market, and it's going to be a celebrity waiter kind of venue. So for tickets that are $25, it's going to be chefs that are on hand who are going to make farm to table food, a meal there that we'll have. And it's from 6 to 9 with a meal starting at 7.
Yes.
And all the proceeds then go to back into the farmers market for some of the programs that we have and some of the needed upgrades that we have that we need to make to kind of try to help support that.
Yeah. So they'll support things like Children's Power Produce.
Right.
And you know, all the things that we do down there, it's kind of crazy when you look at what we had before. We had a market that was, you know, that was down Jackson Hill neighborhood that we didn't, you know, I don't say we neglected, but we didn't put a lot of effort into it like we do now. And so you come to this one and we have musicians all over the market to entertain people, and we have more landscaping and more flowers and just all these things to really make it look and feel.
We have dancing on Thursdays.
Yeah, and we just do all these things over there, and they just cost dollars. And to push all that on the vendors is hard.
Right.
Now, the vendors have to, obviously, you know, they're the ones making money out there, so we have to find the happy medium. therefore what vendors should pay, but also we have people that come down there and enjoy it, and we think that the people who enjoy the market will gladly support it with a donation or you know, or a dinner or a sponsorship.
And sponsors, I was just going to say, we also have opportunities for sponsors, which is a great time. And a sponsor can be as little as $100 all the way up to $1,000 that people can contact us and sponsor the event and get their name out there and show their support of the community and of the farmers market, those people who enjoy it. And if anybody's interested in that, they can contact our office at 724-6705. I happen to be one of the celebrity waiters, and I'm telling you, I'm in a contest with a couple of people to fill up the most tables I can. So I appreciate anybody calling me, because I'm going to win. I'm very competitive.
All right. Yeah. Well, I've sold six tickets, so
six.
I'm moving on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I got eight.
I got my first table filled. I'm working on a second one right now.
Good
so
for you.
Yeah, we'll see what happens here. All right, so we are out of time already. I can't believe how fast that went. So I want to thank Frank Peterson for taking time out of his very busy schedule to be here with us today and kind of give us some updates on these programs. We really appreciate that.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks. Until next time.